Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and I'm not even sure if it's crazy, but certainly very sad news to close out our week here, the work week. But Jim, we'll start with a couple of pieces of news that have a lot of people excited. This isn't actually a martini. You and I have certainly expressed our reservations of cheering for the Redskins and for a large part, pretty much any Washington team. There was an interesting tweet before the Stanley Cup Finals between Washington and Vegas that said, "Wow, this is quite a Stanley Cup final. One city is full of corruption and debauchery, and the other one's Vegas." And so there's a lot of reasons not to like Washington. I have to say I'm impressed with the Capitals, not only winning the Cup, but the gritty way in which they did it. They were down in a couple different series. They finally overcame their nemesis in Pittsburgh, and they didn't choke away a 3-1 lead. So we'll see ultimately how much annoying gloating goes on from people who a month ago didn't know the difference between a blue line and a free throw line. But nonetheless, they earned it, and Washington's sports drought is over. Congratulations to the Capitals.
I was going to say, Greg, as someone who kind of sort of knew the difference between a free throw line and the blue line about a month ago, it's been really wonderful to jump on the bandwagon. I would say generally, it's just nice to see, even if you're not a fan, your friends and neighbors and people in the Washington area in a good mood for once. People obviously know this is the first time since the early 90s that Washington has had a champion. You and I have made fun of the Redskins quite a bit. And I think we had somebody on Twitter who asked, why do you guys, you know, pick on the Redskins so much? Particularly considering how you root for the Bears and the Jets. You don't have that much, you know, of a leg to stand on. And our point was just that, the, you know, the local, for a variety of reasons, but one of them being that the local coverage is just obsessive. You know, in, you know, let's take you out live to Redskins Park to give you an update on how the sod is being put on the field, how the grass is going to look different in practice this year. And then the other teams in the D.C. area were generally much better, but even they had had this like long history of being really talented, some great stars, and just not being quite good enough to win, of you know, getting playoff caliber and then plateauing and falling apart in the postseason. I think you apply to the Nationals, Bryce Harper, Max Scherzer, they got plenty of stars. The I don't know about you, how you see the coverage, Greg, but the Washington Wizards have been the team of tomorrow for like 8 straight seasons now.
Of course.
Tomorrow never seems to get here. John Wall's great. They're getting the playoffs, and then, you know. And then, of course, you know, there was the Capitals, who had Ovechkin, one of the best players in the game, or, you know, some might say the best player in the game, and could never quite put it together. And here they are. The monkey is off their back. They are indisputable champions. And, you know, you see a lot of cities celebrate, but I just feel like, you know, Washington really, really is savoring this victory. And so good for all the Washington Capitals fans out there.
Yeah, Cleveland was the most starved franchise until the Cavs won a couple of years ago. Doesn't look like that's going to happen this year. Then it was Washington. And I don't know how this officially works and how many professional sports teams you need to have before you get the drought moniker. But Minneapolis hasn't won since the Twins in 91. San Diego's down to one team now. They haven't won anything with the Padres. They haven't won with the Chargers since the AFL days. So interesting to see who gets the moniker next and who gets the pressure. But well done, Caps. And, yeah, congrats, Caps fans. All right.
And also, let's give credit to the Las Vegas Knights and all of their fans who have been suffering for months and months. And, you know.
Yes, their drought's at 1 year because this was their first year in the league. So. Which is quite impressive that they got that far. But anyway, on to our actual good martini. Jim, fighting back against the heavy hand of government is always something to be celebrated. This is U.S. News and World Report. Lemonade stands are landing some kids around the U.S. in legal hot water. Stories of local authorities shutting down or fining children's lemonade stands for improper permitting and operating without business licenses have grabbed headlines across the nation in recent years. Such was the case over Memorial Day weekend when Denver authorities forced a group of kids to close shop after vendors at a nearby arts festival reportedly called the police to complain. Without a temporary vending permit in line with the city ordinance, the three brothers, ages 2 to 6, had no choice but to close. In response, Country Time Lemonade brand is launching a new initiative dubbed Legal Aid, with Ade, spelled A-D-E, that features a team of people who will help lemonade stands deal with permit issues. If a child gets fined for running a lemonade stand, Legal Aid will reimburse the cost of the fine or permit up to $300. The Kraft Heinz owned brand has committed to covering up to a limit of $60,000 total. The Legal Aid team will review submissions, which will include uploaded images of the child's permit or fine, along with a description of what the stand means to the child in his or her own words. So, Jim, of all the things police have to be concerned about and local authorities, busting 2-, 4-, and 6-year-olds for their lemonade stand doesn't seem to be real high on the priority list. So now that Common Sense has taken a permanent vacation, it's good to see Country Time stepping up not only for its product, but also for free enterprise and giving these kids a business instinct.
You know, Greg, whoever thought of this at Country Time, give that person a promotion. When's the last time you had a corporation announced an initiative like this that is kind of in effect helping, I'm making kind of air quotes as I say this, the competition? You know, maybe they're using Country Time materials to make their lemonade, but by and large, the whole point is like, look, it's kids with a lemonade stand. What do you think kids at a lemonade stand, do they make $20 by the end of the day if they're lucky? I mean, this is, you know, not massive operations. I'd love to see those people at the festival who call the cops. First of all, why are the cops not laughing at the people? I mean, I'm hoping they didn't call 911, you know, but let's assume they called the non-emergency number. Yeah, I operate a lemonade stand here at the festival, and there's these kids who have set up another one. How would John McClane respond to that sort of police call, right? You know, what kind of, you know. So the second thing is I kind of want to say, what is with these you know, police officers, these government officials, these regulators, these people in authority who have the authority of government who come along and say, wait a second, kids with a lemonade stand, get them, call out the SWAT team, let's, you know, surround them. We're kind of left with this scratching our head. My sneaking suspicion is, Greg, in fact, I was just saying this to someone last night, of all the things that government could do, if you say, what do you want government to do? I'm sure a lot of people would be like, you know, get the drug dealers away from near schools, right? Clean up the streets. Gangs, you know, things that really menace us, things that are really dangerous to us, that frighten us, make people live in fear. But you know what, Greg? Those are tough. Those people shoot back. Kids with a lemonade stand, they're not going to go anywhere. You know, there's no menace there. You know, those are the easy cases, the lowest hanging fruit. And, you know, talk about taking candy from a baby. You know, what's easier than going up to a bunch of 2- and 4-year-olds and saying, hey, you got to shut down the lemonade stand. You know, I'm shutting you down. You're out of business, kid. You know, it kind of represents, I think, a laziness in the thinking of, you know, of thinking of government and the action of government, and also I think in the common sense of government. I think when somebody complains, like, now here's the thing: if the kids are, you know, putting out bad lemonade and everybody's getting food poisoning or something like that, then it's a different conversation. Then you can interact or something like that. But we talk about occupational licensing. I know it's been a big cause for the Koch Network and various other right of center, small government organizations, anti-regulation groups. You hear about the people who need like 500 hours of training to do hair braiding. I believe, Greg, in Maryland, there's occupational licensing for fortune tellers. I did not see that coming. Now, here's the thing. I'm very curious about how you actually, what you have to do to get your fortune teller occupational license. I guess they don't tell you. You just are supposed to foresee what the requirements are sometimes. But, you know, I think it was Governor Matt Bevin down in Kentucky who talked about repealing some of the requirements or training requirements for hairdressers and barbers. And, you know, obviously you want maybe a little bit, but he said, you know, really, this seems like a problem that would take care of itself. If you get a really bad haircut, how many people go back to that same person?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the only upside here is, you know, as many parents as possible, get your kids out there with a lemonade stand in a prominent spot, because I think every kid that gets the heavy hand of government is going to be a conservative voter when they get to 18. So the more people that go through this, the better off our politics will probably be eventually.
And also one kind of final thought, it teaches, I think, a valuable lesson, not just about capitalism, salesmanship, business, operating expenses, all that kind of thing. Also, you recognize that if you do this, if it's like a summer tradition in your home, you recognize with each passing year that you get less cute and people are less willing to spend a buck for a cup of lemonade.
That's right. Yeah. So when you're 5, jack up the price. And then as you get older, you got to reduce it to stay competitive. All right. On to our bad martini now, Jim. This is courtesy of, I think, the New York Times. James A. Wolfe, 57, was charged with lying repeatedly to investigators about his contacts with three reporters. According to the authorities, Mr. Wolfe made false statements to the FBI about providing two of them with sensitive information related to the committee's work. He denied to investigators that he ever gave classified material to journalists, the indictment said. Mr. Wolfe, the Intelligence Committee's director of security, was slated to appear before a federal judge on Friday in Washington. The seizure was disclosed in a letter to the Times reporter Allie Watkins, who had been in a three-year relationship with Mr. Wolfe. The seizure suggested that prosecutors under the Trump administration will continue the aggressive tactics employed under President Barack Obama. So essentially what's happening here is that the FBI is investigating leaks. They found out that this guy, James Wolfe, who worked with the Senate Intelligence Committee as the director of security, was passing sensitive classified information on to Allie Watkins. At least that's the allegations. And as you point out, Jim, Wolf is 57 and married. Watkins was 22 in 2014. The indictment says that Wolf and reporter number two, who is Watkins, began a personal relationship in December 2013. Not to make this any more creepier, but just to put it into context, Allie Watkins, this reporter, 5 years ago, tweets out, "So on a scale of one to ethical, how does everyone feel about pulling a real Zoe Barnes for story ideas? Totally kidding, House of Cards." And apparently that's how Zoe Barnes got her stories, was getting intimate with sources. So, Jim, talk about a sordid story.
We can kind of take the funny double entendre approach, or we can take the this is the sort of thing that creates cynicism about journalism. I would have argued before this revelation that, come on, that's very Hollywood. It's the sort of thing you see in House of Cards. You know, reporters do not sleep with sources. I don't know about you, Greg. My sources are really never expressing any interest in me in that way. and I think a lot, there are probably a lot of women reporters out there who are going to feel like, we're going to get more accusations. Oh, she's sleeping her way to the top. Oh, she, that kind of stuff. But in this case, look, she got her first scoop in 2014, and apparently it was right after the relationship began. And you look over her life's work, she's always been on the national security beat and the intelligence community and stuff like that. And look, it's not to say that every story she's ever done has had this gentleman as a source. She doesn't identify the sources, but a lot of her stories do talk about the Senate Intelligence Committee. And you can kind of start wondering when they say that an intelligence official, a U.S. government official, et cetera, we can take an educated guess as to who at least one of her sources is. And, this is kind of played for laughs in the movie Thank You for Smoking. Look, if you're romantically involved with one of your sources, that's the sort of thing that's going to, raise questions about objectivity and fairness. And are you leveling with your readers and these sorts of things? I've not heard a ton of questions answered from BuzzFeed or New York Times or Politico, any of the places that she's written. Look, I this sort of thing is very rarely written explicitly. Do they talk to their friends? Do they talk? Sure, horizontal mambo, physical interaction like that is generally frowned upon because you are considered the question of, are you using your source? Is your source using you? Are you trading a particular service for sources for information and things like that? That's just not a it looks really, really bad, and it's going to have people thinking, reporters are in bed with their sources all the time and things like that. There's already a great deal of cynicism and suspicion around reporters. Already you see, not just from Trump, but I think politicians have always attacked the media when they report information that they don't like. But the idea that Allie Watkins always was getting these amazing scoops about what was going on in the intelligence community, well, now we know how she did it, and it wasn't traditional shoe leather reporting, I guess you could say. And it just kind of looks very bad for her, looks very bad for the institution she worked for, looks extraordinarily bad for the gentleman who's now facing charges. Apparently none of the information was classified, but it was still secret, still sensitive, not the sort of thing that should be shared. And I think everybody on the Senate Intelligence Committee is kind of probably looking at each other sheepishly this morning.
All right, Jim, on to our third martini now. And as we mentioned at the outset, there's not necessarily a great adjective to describe this one. It's been a difficult week when it comes to the issue of suicide. Kate Spade, the famed and very successful designer, took her life at the age of 55 earlier this week at her home in New York. And then this morning we got major news about another prominent figure. This is from CNN. Anthony Bourdain, the gifted chef, storyteller, and writer who took TV viewers around the world to explore culture, cuisine, and the human condition for nearly two decades, has died. He was 61. CNN confirmed Bourdain's death on Friday and said the cause of death was suicide. Bourdain was in France working on an upcoming episode of his award-winning CNN series, Parts Unknown. His close friend, a French chef, found Bourdain unresponsive in his hotel room Friday morning. The CNN statement says, "It is with extraordinary sadness that we can confirm the death of our friend and colleague Anthony Bourdain. His love of great adventure, new friends, fine food and drink, and the remarkable stories of the world made him a unique storyteller." And obviously, Jim, with two celebrities taking their own lives so close together, it's leading a lot of people to once again come to the conclusion that, first of all, we think we know these people, and we don't. I mean, a lot of times the people closest to people who take their own lives are shocked when it happens, even though they might have more idea of what they're going through. But this is becoming a bigger and bigger problem, and not just for folks in the public eye. This is a story from Tribune. More than a decade of steadily rising rates have made suicide the nation's 10th leading cause of death, and one of only three causes of death, including Alzheimer's disease and drug overdoses, that are increasing in this country, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In a report that examines trends in suicide at the state level from 1999 to 2016, the CDC says suicide rates have increased in nearly every state. In half the states, the agency found the rate rose more than 30%. So, Jim, this is an issue that's become a major problem. We've seen stories about veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, unfortunately, battling demons that sometimes lead them to take their lives. It's unfortunately usually only when it happens with a celebrity that we get this kind of attention to it, but it desperately needs attention.
When you lose somebody suddenly, it's always terrible. They die in, say, a car accident or something like that. You're like, oh, my, why did that have to happen? You know, but you have one clear emotion when it happens. It's grief. It's sadness. You feel like someone's been taken from you. When someone takes their own life, you got a lot more different emotions in there. Obviously, there's grief. Obviously, there's sadness. Obviously, there's that same sense of loss. But there's often a sense of anger. There's often a sense of, how could you do this? Why would you do this? How could you not tell someone that you were having these sorts of feelings, these sorts of drive towards it? It was, you know, probably about a year ago. I wouldn't say a, you know, close friend, but somebody I knew who was a Second Amendment advocate shot himself and killed himself. In addition to everything, the loss, the sense, the shock, all of that, there was also amongst myself and my friends and everybody else kind of shaking our heads saying, wait a second, we've been arguing that you know, people have a right to have these guns, that the Second Amendment is not a threat to people's lives. And then you go out and take your own life, and you do it in a way that basically strengthens the argument of everybody you've ever argued against. You just undermined your life's work by demonstrating that you can hide these sorts of problems and be a threat to yourself. And you know, unfortunately, there were several people who I thought made somewhat exploitative arguments in the aftermath of this man's suicide. In the case of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, like, I wasn't a huge follower of the fashion world, but Kate Spade seemed to be on top of the world, a great success, living the life that, you know, millions of people would love to have. And Bourdain, my God, you want to talk about a guy who, you know, got paid very well to travel all around the world to these fascinating exotic places, eat amazing food. He seemed to have friends all around the world. There was the relationship with Asia Argento had become very active in the Me Too movement. There was something I just saw from Andrew Zimmern, another food host, television host, who said that in his interactions with Bourdain, he said for the past year and a half, he seemed happier than he'd ever seen before. It is just mystifying and enraging and upsetting and just bewildering. There are all these emotions that kind of go through when you look at somebody who seems to be on top of the world. And I guess on the one hand, you could say, okay, this shows that it's not something that's rational. It's not something that can make sense to the rest of us. It's got to be something biochemical. They're not seeing the life that we're seeing as we watch these people. they aren't seeing themselves. I think what's absolutely terrifying right now, Greg, is the possibility that God knows how many people out there who don't have fame, who don't have a personal fortune, who aren't living lives of glamour and excitement and all these wonderful things that Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain got to enjoy, are looking at their experiences and saying, well, if they chose to kill themselves, what chance do I have? And so I hope you're having these thoughts, I guess I should be glad that you're listening to the Three Martini Lunch. I'd like to think that Greg and I can keep you going every 24 hours or so. Call someone. Call the National Suicide Hotline. Talk to someone. No matter how bad you're feeling, the world would be a worse place without you. Stick around. Talk to someone. You'd be surprised how many people feel this and how many people want to help you if you just let people in and let them know you're going through a rough time and you're just not sure how to get through it or something like that. It's a dark day in this, and it kind of one of those things where, you know, maybe we need just to have a much more open discussion about anxiety and despair and depression and all of these things that cause people to go down this path, leaving so many people hurt behind them.
Absolutely. I mean, it can be a very difficult life. Life is very difficult at various times, but life is also beautiful. And I would encourage people to remember that and see just the fact that life itself is a great gift and that God has blessed you with, and that you would pursue that in a vibrant way. I would also commend folks to read a column by Bethany Mandel that appeared in the New York Post a little bit earlier this week. She lost her father to suicide and wrote a very powerful piece because it's oftentimes people give up on themselves and they think that everyone else in their life will be better off without them. It's not the case. It rips them apart, and it's a wound that never fully heals as long as they're alive. So please, please do not fall for those lies. Jim, it's not like we haven't had enough bad news on this episode of the Three Martini Lunch, but just as we were recording here, the Fox News alert came on my phone. Fox News Channel analyst Charles Krauthammer reveals he has weeks to live as he enters the final stages of his battle with, quote, aggressive cancer. So Charles, who has been away from the panel on the Brett Baer Show for quite a while now, obviously appears he will not be returning and will not be with us for much longer.
Yeah. When he had that absence for that long, you had a feeling that the news wasn't good, that whatever he was dealing with in terms of health had to be serious. You could tell Charles Krauthammer loved to write, loved to. You talk about a figure who people would not necessarily have expected to have turned into a fascinating must-watch television pundit. Charles Krauthammer, you know, almost every time he opened his mouth, you learned something new. There was some sort of keen insight. There was something amazing. So, Greg, back in 1997, most people know that, you know, Charles Krauthammer is paralyzed, gets around in a wheelchair. He traditionally has a personal assistant who was hiring a new one to do that. It was sort of like a journalism job, but as he explained to me when I went in for the interview, you had to do stuff like repair wheelchairs if the wheelchair broke. It was a very interesting full spectrum of helping him out. Most people did it for about a year. I won't embarrass him by saying how low the pay was, but let's just say it was a very low pay. But at the end of it, you spend a year around Charles Krauthammer and absorb everything, his writing, his thinking, his research, all the things that made Charles Krauthammer so brilliant and insightful and thought-provoking and illuminating. And, I know we got a, letter of recommendation from Charles Krauthammer, which opened up a lot of doors. My boss, Rich Lowry, was one of the assistants who did this sort of duties. So, Greg, in 1997, I came in second out of like 1,000 applicants. I think it was some guy with a PhD was willing to be Charles Krauthammer's personal assistant that year or something. But he was always extraordinarily nice to me, generous with his thoughts. He was charming, but he also had this kind of look. He has this look in his eyes where you can feel like he's looking right through you. That he can, figure absolutely everything out. So it's heartbreaking to hear this news. He has been missed on the opinion pages. He's been missed in Fox News. Just hope for everybody around him that they at least, get one last chance to say how much they care for him. And we can say what an enormous influence he's been on so many people in the conservative movement and the Republican Party and thinkers, journalists. Wow. This has been a challenging day, Greg. I hope everybody else is getting through it okay. Yeah. Traditionally, I say thank God it's Friday, but I really mean it today. I think we've had all the bad news we can take this week.
Yeah, definitely one of the more sober episodes we've had, but it's certainly certainly called for today. Let's hope the weekend gives us a chance to rest, stay close to those we love, and we'll reconvene on Monday. Jim, we'll see you then.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a good weekend, everyone.